Welcome to Emotional Sobriety, the next step in recovery with Dr. Alan Berger and Tom Rutledge. Nutshell of the day, nutshell wisdom of the day. This is by Tom Rutledge, Esquire. Even introverts need connection and support. Solitude is vital. Isolation is deadly. Would you care to explain yourself, Tom?
What I do know about solitude is recharging. You know, that's one of the main things I learned about extroversion and introversion, because I got confused about that a lot because of my personality, and I would easily mistake myself for an extrovert. It's like, you know, what I finally learned was no. And the better way to evaluate that is extroverts are they're weird. I mean, I don't remember, Joe, you may be one. I don't know that you are, but it's like you're not okay. It's like, because you're like, no. I think you're like me. That somebody finally labeled me a situational extrovert. They says you're gonna be indistinguishable between other extroverts when you're in public, because that's how you're gonna do that. But what finally got to me was he said, you will drain your battery when you're around a lot of people. When you're, you know, even in the best of circumstances, your recharge is going to be in solitude. And that doesn't even necessarily mean all by myself. It may be, the three of us are sitting in a corner somewhere in front of a fire having a conversation. It's quiet.
I'd rather be right here where I am in the earbud of someone listening to this podcast than at their Christmas party.
Yes.
Me too, as it happens. Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the weird things, because I'll also have a fun time at the party.
Yeah.
And it's like, Dee Dee and I had to go through that for a while, because Dee Dee would go like, well, see, you had a good time. And I go like, well, yeah, I did. And I'm pretty resourceful at having a good time. But that doesn't mean that's really was my preference of what I wanted to do. Or, you know, and if when I have an opportunity, I want to have that choice to say no and to go like, no, let's just stay here. Or how about you go do that and I'll stay here.
I learned that during the shelter in place during COVID, that I'm way more introverted than I knew I was. Yeah. I was so glad to not have to go to a single party, you know, cocktail parties or family or whatever. I just, what a gift to just know, love to, but I can't, right? You know, and it was
no, but you know what? The COVID was a real education about stuff like that. I mean, it's like, I know people, because I know people and worked with people who suffered through a lot of that. It's like, I didn't have a moment's problem with the involuntary retreat of COVID of, 2020. It's like, I was fine. Me and Dee Dee and I were home mostly during the day. Dee Dee would still work. I would spend the day with my dog, and I was, and other people were getting really antsy. Not me. I got nervous when it was time to get back out here and clients wanted to come see me in my office.
And, you know, the other sort of realization, which I would love to share, is for all of the workup I do about, I don't want to do this, I wish it was next month, not today or tomorrow. It's always way better than I made it out to be. Like, I have a good time. It's nice. Yeah. All the attention isn't on me, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like,
oh yeah, that's a big one.
Quietly and let it happen in front of me, right? And it's not going to be that bad almost always. Unless you get kicked by a horse.
Well, in turn, and I've already demonstrated that can be good too. It's like, as long as you get kicked at the right velocity in the right place. But when you're saying that, it goes back to, I think one of the themes in my head today for the emotional sobriety part about that is back to that, just back to the main issue of acceptance and just, it's sort of like this participation, but witnessing kind of together as you go through your life. It's like, because what you're describing is the problem is I'm judging it. I'm getting out of the, I'm not in the present moment because I'm making up a story in my head that I'm not going to enjoy this. It's like, really? Are you just not enjoying yourself while you're thinking about not going there? And then in truth is, as you know, I'll get there, I'll be fine. know, is it the most fun you've ever had? Well, no, but that wasn't the goal.
Well, I love in your nutshell here, Tom, the distinction between solitude and isolation. And it reminds me of what Alan always says about how, separateness between people can just be another dimension of their connection to each other. Because when you're in solitude, or meaning you're not with another person, you can be plugged into a power source. It's not, you're not just ducking out from that connection with something outside of yourself. It's just the form of that connection has changed. And so yeah, I really like that. You can
No,
be.
I like what you said about that too, because I think for me, when you said you're still plugged into a power source, I'm going like, yeah, it's kind of, one of the more powerful, or maybe the most powerful power source that I have. And it's whether that you think of that as our higher selves or what's beyond us, or just the larger community. It's just, but it's peaceful.
The holidays can be a gauntlet. We're going to have our topic of the day be how do we manage not just others' unreasonable expectations of us during the holidays, but our own expectations and demands of what this holiday should be.
Sounds like Alan's in the room.
I know. Yeah. These episodes are always they come in a pinch. Holidays, I don't when I was a kid, they used to be I used to love them unequivocally. I think that a lot of families succeed for some period of time and kind of like constructing the entire holiday around a child's pleasure and gifts and let's just put on the pageant to to give them a good show. And then for me in my journey with addiction, I lost a lot of years, and holidays used to be a place where I would sulk off to go get loaded, or I would just try and melt into the background, in a crowded room. I would just be trying to kind of cope and get through it like a marathon. And now in sobriety, I'm struggling with it in the way that all normies do, and just dealing with, yeah, like the like I said, the withering expectations of other people, and then my own shoulds of what this day should be, and this heightened sense of, it can't just be a day. It's got to be the solution to all our problems. And so I thought we could go around and just talk a little bit about emotional sobriety and the holidays.
Sure. I would just say, first of all, I'm re trying to rethink things freshly whenever we start one of these things. And I think there's pressure to be delusional, during the time, because I have memories like yours too. Like to say, all good, but it's not true.
I got sober November 27th, 1976. So, for
Wow.
our listeners who aren't from America, there is no Thanksgiving for me tomorrow. We're recording on a Wednesday. And, but I, what I can tell you about anybody who gets sober the end of November, they weren't planning on staying around. Like, there's no way November 27th, I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to just, get in shape and be ready for Christmas sober. And then New Year's, that'd be a new experience. Can't wait, right? New Year's sober. Wow. Haven't tried that yet. Well, not since I was seven. And so I was 1 foot in, 1 foot out in my early sobriety, just trying to help somebody else get sober, someone I cared about, and being their sober buddy. And a sober buddy says all the right things, and I wasn't doing that for them. I was doing that so I didn't draw any undue attention on myself, right? Because I saw what they did to people who resisted, right? They circled them, and I had these horrible ideas that, they were AA SWAT teams that just sort of came down on ropes, breaking the glass windows and, grabbing the bottles or the weed and, just going about their business. Yeah. And so I was planning my escape and figuring it out as I was going along, with no intention of being sober a month later, or going to meetings, or any of that stuff. And I really learned it is a day at a time, right? I started worrying about it when I was 3 weeks sober and I could see what was coming. And every season is a dangerous season to be sober in a drinking normative world. In Canada, when the season for patios for restaurants open, when you can be there with your sunglasses on and your beer, it is just really from May to September. And now you've got to walk by all of these joyful patio scenes. So in a drinking normative world, it's harder to be sober. And it is always going to be a day at a time, no matter what day you get sober. And so, do all of the things that make sense. I was reminded by another recovery loved one that it's okay to lie, right? Why aren't you drinking? Oh, medication, right? You'll feel worse about drinking than you will about lying, the morning after the night before. So do whatever you have to. If you can go with a sober buddy, great. If you can call somebody, great. I'm driving. I gotta, have a reason to have to leave at a reasonable time before, someone's hair is on fire and they fall into the tree. And that's rough. So there's ways, and any meeting you go to, they're going to be talking about it this time of year. So whether you go to 12-step meetings or refuge recovery meetings or She Recovers or Dharma Recovery, people are going to have been there before. They've been through it, and you're going to get some help from them.
And so tomorrow's the day. Tomorrow is your official sober birthday.
The 49th. So I'm going to practice being humble and 50 years sober. I've got a year to practice that, right? Because you can't be
Yeah,
really.
that's where you caution yourself not to spend the rest of the year going like, I'm almost 50 years sober, and go like, don't say that. Come on, let's be a little bit superstitious here.
Okay, but I will be entering my 50th year, so
You
I could
will.
word it
That's see, that's
differently.
accurate. There you go. Now you're talking.
But good caution. Thank you, Tom.
How do you observe the milestone, or what's going to be your ritual for tomorrow?
I'm speaking at Beyond Belief Agnostics and Free Thinkers AA group because Patrick couldn't
Wow.
get an American to speak, so I'm gonna my other Patrick H.
I met
So
him.
I'll be speaking for 20 minutes there, so I better stay sober for that. I
Well,
mean, everyone's an
that's
example.
well,
You can be a bad example.
you've covered 20 minutes. That's good. Okay. 20 minutes at a time, my friend.
I just can't get out of my head the image of the AA SWAT team. They're like rappelling
Yeah,
down
yeah.
into the building
Oh man, by the
to.
way, they exist. I've seen them.
Oh, you come from the world of interventions.
Oh God.
I have a client who has her family drinks heavily, and she's been to quite a few Al-Anon meetings because she is not a drinker, but she's been messed up a lot by the drinkers in her family, and she knows an exit strategy by this point. She just gets to there's a time in the meal where things start to get a little dicey, and she already kind of has on a Swiss watch, when she's going to need to get out of there for her own self-preservation.
Look at you watching. Going, look, I've enjoyed talking to you, but I got to really get to my Homicides Anonymous meeting. I've got like 2 weeks clean, and then just turn around and walk out. It's like,
Yeah, I won't be a newcomer at
right.
HHA on the holiday.
Nobody's gonna follow you. It's like, actually, I'm thinking right now of a client I saw yesterday that with Thanksgiving coming, and I mean, she's been at this for a long time, and she's what she calls herself a double winner. She's a rec long time recovering from a alcoholism and from eating disorder, and I'm sure she picked this up in the program because I've heard it before, but she just without misses a beat re refers to tomorrow is Thursday. She said, "Well, you want to come to dinner?" And somebody said, "Well, you wouldn't always turn me down on Thanksgiving." And she goes like, "Well, it's just Thursday. How do you get to 49 years? This can apply to everything, anything." that we're working on changing. The principle is the same. Changing long-standing beliefs, but also a lot of this is just habit. It's like the, and when I mean habit, I just mean things we don't even think about. It's just we automatically do. And so part of what recovery is, and we do need to turn the put the magnifying glass on it during the holiday sometimes, is to look for those little details that we may be missing. I mean, I think that's one of the things we in our culture we do with holidays anyway, is it's unrealistic. My wife and I figured this out many years ago in our marriage that it, there's no although we were operating unconsciously off of a belief system that every Christmas would be better than the last. It's like, well, think about that for a minute. What kind of pressure is that? And that's not, they're going to be different. That's what we finally got to was no, every Christmas is a different Christmas. Every holiday is a different holiday. And some of them are better than others. And, we spent one holiday back in 2013 in a hospital, in a hospital. I was in a hospital bed because my horse kicked me for Christmas Eve. And it's like we, and back by that time, we'd been at it long enough where we just called that our Christmas of gratitude. It's just like, boy, this is a good thing to be here rather than where we came really close to being.
I'm imagining that's like a deleted scene from It's a Wonderful Life as Jimmy Stewart gets kicked by a horse.
I imagine that being kicked in the stomach by a horse is 1 foot away from what could have been so much worse.
Oh, listen,
Indeed, touche.
my trauma surgeon, and he was totally serious, but he did a beautiful job of just delivering this with a total straight face. He said, if you're going to get kicked in the stomach with a ho by a horse, you got kicked in just the right place. And at just the right velocity. He sat to explaining to me, if it had kicked you harder, this is what would have happened. If he had kicked you a little bit higher, this is what would have happened. And this, which was, by the way, my heart would just stop. And lower, this is the level of surgery you would be involved in. It's like, so that, I think that's actually where the Christmas of gratitude came in. Get put the, and it's a good lesson in emotional sobriety. Put things in perspective. Pan back so that you can see everything, not just the parts that get on your nerves or upset you.
I read a great Cormac McCarthy quote the other day. It's you don't know what worse luck your bad luck is rescuing you from.
See, I love that. I love if I have a fender bender, it probably saved me from getting broadsided by a semi, about a mile down the road. So I need to be grateful that this person cut in front of me
Well, I
and
mean,
I had this minor accident.
Isn't that a great example of emotional sobriety? And I don't remember the last time I ever said, at least it can't get worse.
Yeah, you don't want to tempt the gods on that. No. It could always get
I am
worse.
so superstitious that if you and I were sitting in the same area and you said that, I would just probably tackle you. I would just lay on top of you and just
No!
slow motion.
Yeah. Right. My emotional sobriety trial for the holiday is I had to disappoint my parents because last Thanksgiving, for different reasons, I had to be separate from my partner, my romantic partner, and ended up having a great time. I participated in the cooking and the presentation of the meal. It was a big, busy Thanksgiving dinner. My sponsee came and sat with us, and the parents, are big potheads, and they just watched YouTube videos in the living room while I made myself busy and just tried to stay out of the danger zone by making food and stuff. And anyway, it was a great time. And then this year, it looked to be the same. The same thing was on the menu. And for different reasons, my girlfriend can't be a part of that, can't be a part of the main feed bag for Thanksgiving. And so I decided, I'm like, I'm gonna be with her and we're gonna have our Thanksgiving this year, and I won't be able to be with, the family. And usually it's just one parent or the other, but this time it was both barrels with both parents, just like, we're disappointed in you. We would like to spend the holiday together. And For this reason, that reason, it's wrong. It's wrong that you don't participate. And this was an instance of me just digging my heels in as politely as I could. And just, this is what I know is right for me and for my relationship at this point in time. But what that means for me advocating for that is that I'm not going to be able to get everybody on board. I'm not going to be able to get, there will be no like consensus reality here. Their reality is that this is an immense disappointment and a betrayal on some level. And for me, I think this is right for myself and my relationship.
Well, what you just said I'd not stopped and thought of this in particular, but that's one of the things that's one of the things we let go of in emotion, working with the practice of emotional sobriety, is our job is not to get a consensus, from people. We're not trying to get people to agree with us. See, we grow up in a culture where that's really the deal. We're taught to sell, and I'm gonna tell you my decision, and then I'm gonna sell you on it. It's like, if I were, I might, you're important to me. I might want you to see my perspective so that maybe you will agree with me. And it's but if not, it's, I mean, that's, I mean, I think about what I do this time of year in my office with talking to people about families and stuff. I mean, that's such a huge part of it, is people just wanting other people to think like they think, to believe like they believe, to choose like they choose. And it's like emotional sobriety to me teaches me, and be polite, be respectful to other people, be a good person. That's my job, to be the best person that I can be. But my job is not, it's no longer to do whatever I have to do to please other people. It's like, now if I displease you because I'm an asshole, then I've displeased myself, and I need to work on that, because that's not my goal. That's not the message of be your own person during the holidays, is just, to screw everybody else. Just do, it's like, not that, but you be the kind person. You can be very, we around everything, holidays, politics, anything, we can be kind, and we can be respectful to people, even if we completely disagree with them. It's not easy, but we can do it. But it's like, getting people to agree. And the hard part for I think most of us, or a lot for me, would be early on, would be when they're not going to agree, and I'm able to let go of that, to walk away without realizing that they don't know, they're not operating out of the same principle. They're not thinking nobody has to agree. They're thinking, like you just said, I'm doing wrong. I'm breaking the rules. And these are the things my wife refers to as creating positive guilt. And she describes that as positive guilt is what you feel when you're breaking rules that need to be broken.
For years in recovery, I've had problems with expectations. And these times of year, I don't know why I get out that old, imaginary photo album and try to compare myself to a Norman Rockwell painting, right? All of these movies of these perfect families, right? Maybe there's a comedic aspect to it, but, why am I comparing myself to that?
I don't think Norman Rockwell had a Norman Rockwell family, probably.
I don't
But
know. I've never checked that out. Do you know, Joe?
let's not speculate. If we fall short in some area or we perceive that we fall short, it really casts a pall over
Right.
the day.
Well, I've also discovered through the years in talking to people about this, is that I don't think necessarily everybody has this, but that I was, I'm not alone in the experience of the expectations within myself result in a major, major drop in disappointment after the holidays are over. It's like, I mean, I grew up in a home where, by the afternoon on Christmas Day, I mean, we had lots of depression in my home, but it's like it was really a dark and quiet place, and I had no way of knowing what that was. But what it is, that's what happens when you set your expectations so high, you have a long way to fall. and it hurts when you get there. And it's like what I've learned is to warn people about that. If you do, if you do have that, beware and take good care of yourself in the days after the holidays, because and rather than think you're going to get all this worked out and reprogrammed in your head, just say no. Part of the deal is, and I mean, I'm certain, I'll let you know after this holiday, but I'm certain that there's remnants of that that still exist in me, that there's certain moods that I go through with holidays that have always kind of been there with me, and they're probably still in some ways there. But see, that's also the emotional sobriety is not trying to manage my not trying to manage my emotions, but trying to just accept them.
We're not trying to be on the tightrope. You
Yes.
never, getting
Yes.
too, spontaneous or too organized, or not getting too mad or too euphoric. We're trying to live in a range, right? We want
Right.
emotional range. And what you talked about is very good advice in terms of like the morning after the night before, even sober, can be full of what the hell's wrong. And I've heard of people who got through the their first sister marrying their old boyfriend, right? They got through that, and then the next day they drank.
Yeah, there's this build up, and then finally the bill becomes due.
There's that. I appreciate you saying that, because there's such, I mean, in this, and I want to make this broader for emotional sobriety too, because this certainly is true for those of us who are recovering from substance addictions. But it's like we're survivors. We're all good survivors. We've worked hard at that kind of stuff. So that's a very common pattern in terms of for survivors. We'll get through the difficult thing, and then at the letdown. And this is where I always go back to my intrapersonal model and say that my addiction, my little tequila boy in there, he's an opportunist. So what he does, what I would say if I were guessing, his thinking was basically let him get through the difficult part, and then when he lets his guard down, I'm gonna be right there, because Tom, you deserve a drink. You did good, buddy. Beware of feeling a large responsibility for somebody else's happiness during the holidays. Because I think that's one of the things that I could write you an article on how I got to be that way with the family dynamic I grew up in. But the result was very much so that my needs during the holiday times are really fairly low. I don't. I mean, I spent many years of my younger adult life, just on my own and alone during the holidays. And it's like, I got really used to that, and it's not that big a deal. But I'll say it right now, in our marriage, it's like I know Dee Dee doesn't need me or want me to be focused on how she's doing, how's but I do. And it's like, and I try now. I'm better. I try to stay out of that. But I'm aware of my thinking and my fact that there's a strong part of me that watches to be sure. I want to be sure she's having the holiday that she wants, that she gets, and that kind of stuff. And that's good to a certain degree. She loves seeing her siblings, and tomorrow we have lunch with them as we do every Thanksgiving, and that's a wonderful thing. But I'm an addict. I can take that to a great extent where I put way too much responsibility on myself, and I'm also reading her mind about what it is that she really wants, and which and I try to remember what I tell, my clients all the time. And if I want to know what she really wants, I actually need to ask her.
Here's something that, everyone's an example. I'll be a bad example. My emotional sobriety and the holiday season, because I don't come from, a perfect situation where having the spotlight on life and family and how much better we're supposed to feel than we did the year before, I like to avoid that. Then you go to a meeting. And they want to have a gratitude meeting. And I
We're
don't want
doing
to
one
be
tonight.
grateful. Yeah, I want to be numb. That's what I want. I want to be numb, right? And the funny thing about gratitude meetings, talking about what we're grateful for, it works. You get, even if you don't have a meeting, you get a paper out, you get a pen in your hand. I already feel better, right? I'm thinking positively. I haven't written anything down yet. It works, but I don't want to be manipulated, not even by myself.
I get it.
It's this power struggle I'm having, right? Instead of just, easing into it, letting you just go with it, Joe, as opposed to fighting everything, right?
I like the idea that, hey man, you're a writer. Give you a piece of paper and a pen, you're grateful. It's like now I can write down how bad I feel. I feel very grateful for that. It's like no, I love what you're saying about but watching how we, I don't want to be, I don't, God, I know that part, that rebel in us. I don't, you can't make me do anything. I'm not going to do. And, but actually, if you look close enough, it's like, who's making you? It's like, oh, that would also be me.
Yeah, there's a strong current of control there. Yeah.
Happy birthday and congratulations, Joe. That's, I mean, we make lots of jokes about that stuff, but this is an accomplishment. And it's a one day at a time accomplishment. It's a, but we, and we don't, we're not suffering in the day to day in terms of staying that way before. But I think it's really important that we to each other and to ourselves, we don't forget what a huge accomplishment this is.
And
Yeah, thank you. I said emotionally sober.
I'm just like, it's just strange. Like, you just don't seem that old. I don't know how that sounds, but
I was 14 at my first meeting and 16 when I got
See,
sober.
though, you guys amaze me. I have a friend. I have a friend who is got sober when he was 16, and I mean, he's been sober through all his years. It's like he's just a little bit younger than I am, and it's like, I mean, I do not, I cannot, of course, we just can't imagine something you haven't ever experienced. I cannot imagine getting, and Patrick, I can bet you I can get you on my side here. I cannot imagine getting through my 20s sober.
No, because that
I
was
mean,
such a good solution for a
I
bit.
mean, some of my 30s I didn't get through sober either, but it's like the, I mean, I can't, I mean, I just have so much admiration for the people I know, friends of mine, and including you, Joe, that had gotten, and my guess is that you got sober because you really needed to do it. And because a lot of people I know like that go like they wouldn't have made it through their 20s, as it's like the reason the reason that had to happen because the people who didn't do that and who were in that situation didn't make it, and so I'm very grateful that you did.
I could probably get to 10 thinking about the people I know who didn't make it to their 20s, friends of mine.
Hurts my chest. God bless them.